Welcome to Roundhouse Roulette, a Walker, Texas Ranger podcast. Each week, we recap and review one of the 200 existing Walker, Texas Ranger episodes randomly selected by Roundhouse Roulette. I'm Evan Dalton, here with my brother Adam.
What up?
And our fellow website hacker, Mr. Bob Leahy.
Hey.
What's going on, guys?
Oh, man, just savoring some Walker, Texas Ranger.
Do we have to use the full title so as to not confuse the listeners?
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, I think so, too.
That used to be a luxury that we could enjoy, but...
Yeah, I do blame the reboot for making me
right,
have to say more words. Come on, guys.
We can't even refer it to Walker anymore, can we?
No. Nope.
All right, I'm done. I'm out.
All right. This has been a good podcast, guys.
We had a good run.
Well, I would like to thank you all for joining us as we revisit Chuck Norris's informative take on the World Wide Web.
Mm.
Today, we'll be recapping and reviewing Season 9, Episode 16, entitled 6 Hours, where Walker has to find a billionaire's kidnapped daughter before she's murdered on a live web feed.
In 6 hours.
But before we fire up our dial-up modems and log on to Netscape Navigator, join us as we pull up a stool at CD's Bar and Grill. Hey, guys.
Hey, man.
Yeah, check out this sweet establishment.
Sorry, guys. I'm just logging in.
Oh.
Logging into CompuServe.
That sound effect belongs on this episode at least once.
Yeah, true, I guess we'll get it in there.
It has to. Come on now.
I'm getting thirsty.
Yeah,
but I'm going to say it right here.
Oh, man, he's got the bar pretzel. Don't eat those bar pretzels, man. You don't know who's been reaching in that basket.
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
Wow, well done.
What is that from?
Seinfeld thing, isn't it?
It's like his one line or something he's got.
Yeah, Kramer is going to be an extra, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I think a lot more people would listen to our podcast if we were talking about Seinfeld, but I'm sure that's already been done.
So. Yeah, we probably have a lot more competition, though.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Well, this week we can slake our thirst with a IPA by Stoneface Brewing Company. In Newington, New Hampshire, along the New Hampshire coast.
Mm.
For those of you unfamiliar with the New England area, New Hampshire has a short but sweet coastline.
Was that like 11 miles or something like that? Maybe 19?
Yeah.
It's a prime number, whatever the number.
Well, it always struck me as strange because you pay a toll as you go into New Hampshire. And isn't New Hampshire's slogan, live free or die?
Yep.
It always seemed weird.
Well, as a New Hampshire native, I'll tell you that they get those tolls because they don't have sales tax or income tax.
Well, in the spirit of that, this beer is hop forward and features bright citrus notes with a clean, balanced malt profile. It has been liberally, see what they did there, free, right? Dry hopped with Citra and Amarillo. Creating unmistakable aromatics.
Wow. I can't wait to identify the aromatics in this.
So Amarillo, that's kind of like a Texas connection, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Sure.
Well, you guys ready to drink the tears of the old man in the mountain?
Mm. Old man of the mountain, please.
Nobody cares. Okay.
I'll walk right out of this podcast.
Oh, yeah. I can really smell the Amarillo hops in particular.
I'm identifying a particular Amarillo hop.
It's right down near the roots, I think.
Yeah.
This one's very stemmy.
I've been told it's unmistakable.
I believe I'm sensing some Atlantic seawater.
Oh, yeah, they take it out of Seabrook right down by the nuke, by the power plant. Actually, in Newington, where they make this stuff, is a big oil power plant. So maybe that's where it...
Do they actually have a nuclear power plant along the coast?
Yeah, Seabrook, New Hampshire.
So they've got 13 miles of coastline and like 2 miles of coastline are inaccessible.
No, it's kind of inland a little bit, but okay. It's a nice eyesore. I lived in Hampton, the town right next to it, for a year or two, and they had, you're supposed to get like, was it iodine tablets?
In case something happened.
Yeah, it was like, you should have iodine. I'm like, what? Why? And they're like, well, if, you know,
yeah,
something bad happens, you should take these.
I think if something bad happens, you grab a stone face IPA and watch the sunrise.
It's true.
Well, let's see what's going on with this.
We'll say this has a bit of a hop burn, but it's
it doesn't disappoint.
No, it's a good go-to beer.
So if you guys could rate this beer, would you rate it a live free or a die?
Oh, I'd live free every time.
Yeah, I'm right with you there. It's been a while since we had an IPA here, so it's good.
It's true. Yeah. No, I dig this. What do we got in the old news pile?
Yeah, well, I thought we'd check the socials, which we hadn't for a little bit. For listeners out there, our podcasts are pretty much 2 weeks behind. So anything we reference is always dated before it comes out. So
just get used to it. Just deal with it.
Yeah, just deal with it, okay? But this week, the In the Name of God episode came out. I was sharing the episode around and saying, you know, join us as we drink the Kool-Aid as Walker attempts to rescue Alex from a cult.
Our buddy at Walker TX Ranger Picks, Mignon, who we know well from our interview, she reminded us that it wasn't actually Kool-Aid. It was Flavor-Aid. So, fair enough.
Yeah, she said it's the details, and I said it was definitely our ignorance for sure.
That's some insider knowledge there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good to have.
And Jim Harris also chimed in. He said, do you know why you don't hear any jokes about Jonestown? Because the punchlines are too long.
Oh, I get it. It took me a minute. Yeah. It's not bad, actually. It's a good knee slapper.
Yeah.
That's the highbrow banter that can be inspired by Walker, Texas Ranger.
Yeah, so I just kind of want to use this time right now to apologize to listeners. The whole time we were talking about the cult in the Name of God episode, and we're talking about Kool-Aid, it should have been Flavor-Aid. And thank you, Mignon, for letting us know that we have no idea what we're talking about when it comes to cults. You know, but it's good to learn from that because we're also trying to start our own cult here on Roundhouse.
Right.
Oh, wait, we're not trying to start it.
Yeah, you shouldn't, you can't tell them that.
I just tossed a link in the chat. This is something I discovered.
What is this? This is amazing.
Oh, oh man. Oh! For listeners out there, you really owe it to yourself to go to chucknorris.com. Funnily enough, I mean, we're fans of Walker, Texas Ranger. We're not necessarily fans of Chuck Norris, which is kind of crazy. So I haven't been to chucknorris.com in a while.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm pretty sure everyone who listens to this probably has already been.
Yeah.
We're the last to know.
Yeah, that landing screen is amazing. It's a marvel of web development for sure, which he probably learned how to do maybe starting out in this episode 6 hours, huh?
I think so. He could have learned from our friend Seth, the computer nerd.
ChuckNorris.com. Wow. That's all I got to say. That landing page does not disappoint.
Well, we'd like to give a shout out to our bud Adam back in Massachusetts, not podcast Adam or Walker Station Adam, for purchasing a bit of Roundhouse Roulette merch, including our first sale of the rather sweet Roundhouse Roulette mug.
Yeah, I hope he's filling that up with some fine craft brews soon.
Yeah, I mean, it's great for drinking coffee, obviously, or hot beverages, but, you know, it's ceramic, so it'll insulate cool things, too. And nothing better than toasting a crispy IPA with the bros.
Yeah, though I don't think Adam needs anything to help him be cool, because he already knows what's up if he's buying this stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, the only hope is that he doesn't listen to the podcast, but just purchases the merch because he knows that it represents something cool.
Right. That's what we want to happen. That's the ultimate sign of success.
Yep.
But it's also a sign that he's joined our cult. And every morning when he drinks his coffee...
We don't call it a cult. Remember that?
Yeah. Not a cult. Not a cult.
Gentleman's club.
There's got to be a better way to say that.
we'll work on it, but we're just proud that he's representing it wherever he may be. And yeah, the t-shirts we finally sent out from our first batch are making the rounds, and our bud Armando got his shirt safe and sound, and Adam, our illustrator, got his. So we're representing it across the U.S. here.
It's true. Coast to coast.
We've got the whole nation here represented.
Walker Nation.
Exactly. We can't thank you guys enough for the support, and it's been a blast doing this, so thank you so much. Let's move into our one news item here, guys. We are practitioners here of Walker Texas Ranger, but I couldn't help but notice this week that the reboot Walker was renewed for a second season after only a few episodes airing. So obviously it's doing pretty well as far as ratings, and it's off to a pretty good start for whatever they're doing, and it resonated with their audience.
Good for them.
They announced all the shows that they had renewed for additional seasons. Other shows among Walker that were renewed for an additional season are In the Dark, Nancy Drew, The Flash, and DC's Legends of Tomorrow. So,
never heard of any of them.
Yep, there you go.
All that to say, Walker's coming in for season two. You heard it here 2 weeks after it happened.
That about sums up our news here. We got a lot to cover this week. This is an extremely complex episode, so let's get into it. If you're watching along at home and don't want any spoilers, of which there are many, hit pause and watch season 9, episode 16, 6 hours, and come on back to us. Welcome back. Let's dig into this one. This episode originally aired on April 14th, 2001, and opens at some heightened security outside of a swanky mansion.
There's like a guy with like a mirror looking at the undercarriage of a limo, and you're like, is he checking for bombs or?
Yes.
Something like that. And you're like, well, whoever is at this mansion must be pretty important, right?
Clearly.
I guess. It struck me that, nice pretzel. It struck me that like the prop master found one of those things. It's like a mirror with a flashlight attached to it, and it rolls underneath the car. It's so like you can check for contraband or bombs or something under a vehicle.
Right.
But it just seemed pretty out of place for it to be used in that way. And also, like, the guy gets out of the car and wanders into the mansion while this other dude is still like checking underneath the car.
He knew who he was.
Right, but it seemed weird.
Yeah, I guess he was like, it's clear.
You know. The guy's like, yeah, I know, I'm walking into the building already.
Right.
Anywho, this place obviously owned by someone who needs protection.
Some big hotshot.
I'm thinking this is going to be a bad guy.
Yeah, it looks like the same mansion that they would use for, and probably have used for, a bad guy.
Yeah. So we come in to the house through the front door, and we're at the front stairs, and we meet Mr. Preston. And I was like, is this the president of the United States? Because his name was Preston. And I was like, did he say president? Mr. Preston has two security guards that look like Secret Service people, right?
Oh, yeah.
And he's got someone checking his car for explosives. That's pretty extreme, like something you might do for the president. Do you guys know, after watching this episode, what this guy does?
Yeah, he's rich.
Is that it?
Yeah, he has a lot of money.
Okay. When you have a ton of money, that is your job. That money just makes you more rich, and then so you have money.
Fair enough. Okay. Right. But were you guys confused by that?
Totally. Well, I was with you. I was like, oh, he's probably like a senator or like something, right? At least, you know. Right. And then, yeah, they never really said, but he obviously had a lot of money. So
he was investing, but that's all we really find out. But we don't know what his occupation is. His name sounds like president. He's got a hired crew of Secret Service-like agents protecting him.
And he's clearly getting ready to go somewhere, and he's waiting on someone. He's waiting on Heather. Then we see his wife, Heather, start walking down the stairs. Oh, wait, 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 wait. That's not his wife. It's his daughter. He says, you're not going out and something like that. And she says, Dad, I'm almost 17.
Right. And she's like a blonde, clueless-like bombshell.
I looked this up. I said, there's no way this person is 16. She was 21 when the episode was filmed.
Yeah, okay.
Awesome. And she came down the stairs, and she was wearing like a pretty long dress. Right?
But she was showing her shoulders. that was the thing. Yeah. Yeah. You don't do that.
Yeah. In the Dallas billionaire world, that's pretty raunchy.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Clean it up. Jeez.
Yeah.
So she's like, Dad, why do I have to change? And then she goes to her security detail. What's his name?
McNeely.
McNeely, help me out. And he's like, I'm sorry, but your father's the boss.
She rolls her eyes and walks upstairs. She's like, oh, men.
But yeah, and did you get when the father, Mr. Preston, was saying, those clothes are pretty scandalous. Both the security guards looked at each other like, yeah, I might.
Yeah, there was definitely some, well, we'll get into it more, but there's definitely some weirdness going on with the security guards, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Hard cut, and I think it's safe to say that 70 to 100% of the cuts from scene to scene in this are zoom transitions, rushed zoom transitions.
Yeah. Artfully done.
It was a welcome change back to season, 9?
Yes.
We were just on ChuckNorris.com. And his whole opening of his website is essentially zoom transitions of other images into themselves.
Yeah.
So he's even got extreme zooms on his website still.
Very on brand for Chuck Norris.
So we do an extreme zoom transition with whooshing sound effect to what appears to be the entryway to a Hilton hotel. Mm-hmm. Or maybe a Marriott. If you think that's not boring enough, another zoom transition to a close-up of a buffet table. And we see Sydney and Gage getting their teenager on at a free buffet, piling up their plates with free Danish.
All the accoutrements. Sydney's like, Gage, you only got two things on your plate? And he's like, oh, I didn't know that there was going to be a buffet, so I ate before I came. Rookie mistake. Come on, Gage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he'll learn.
In case we weren't aware that this episode was airing in 2001, Trevet comes around with a large cup, and they're like, oh, what's that? And he's like, it's a cappuccino. And they're like, where'd you get that? And they run after the cart that has cappuccinos, because that is the pinnacle of awesomeness, as a cappuccino.
In 2001.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't know what the point of that was other than to end totally the scene.
Useless. Totally useless, yeah.
This episode is so, I take notes on all these episodes, and I normally have 2, maybe 2.5 pages. This one is 4 pages. And it.
You have 4 pages of notes?
Really? Yes. I didn't take any notes. This is the first episode I didn't.
Yeah, because the plot of this is so paper thin.
I realized after 28 episodes of taking notes that I really never even look at them.
Same here, yeah. And then I forget. I'm like, oh, I took notes of that, and I didn't even bring it up.
Oh, yeah. So this is the part in the episode. We've seen this several times now. I'm thinking back to, like, Black Dragons and everything, where the connection is drawn between Walker and the crew and the quote-unquote old friends of the episode that we meet. Right. So, actually, I'm thinking of...
Jacob's Ladder?
Jacob's Ladder, yeah, where Jacob the firefighter shows up at the same place that Walker and Trevet were responding to the call. And they knew each other because of the Hope House, Alex's charity.
Homeless shelter?
I think it serves multiple purposes for battered women and homeless people and all of that. And it's basically a source of volunteer opportunities as well. This event is the Dallas Business Association Community Spirit Awards.
Okay.
And we learned that Mr. Preston, with all of his wealth, and he must be a business owner, has given a fair amount of money to the Hope House, and his daughter, Heather, also volunteers there. And so she's great friends with Alex. And Mr. Preston is great friends with Walker and Alex. And the whole purpose of this and the reason that the Rangers are at this event is because Alex is getting an award. And if there's one thing we've learned, it's that if one of the Rangers is getting recognized, be it for a softball tournament or a Dallas Business Association Community Spirit Award, you better believe that every single damn one of those Rangers is going to be there.
They support each other, you know?
Yeah, yep. They're a family. Yep.
On the concept of family, we also learn that at this point, Walker and Alex are married.
Mm-hmm. And I think they also imply that she's preggers.
Do they? I caught a comment later.
They don't say it, but she's like, I have been really hungry.
There is that. I just thought that was just
useless banter.
Yeah.
But why would they put that in there otherwise?
What show are we watching? Why do they do a lot of things?
Right. So while they're presenting Alex this award, we see that the wait staff is actually behind the scenes, and people should be wondering where their canapes are, because there are six dudes in their catering getup, and in classic Walker fashion, they pull back some cloths on the tray tables they've got, and
we see some semi-automatic weapons.
The Walker Uzi in there for sure.
Yeah. Yep. It's the weapons chest.
And I'm instantly like, oh, yes, please. I like what you're serving up here.
It's happening. Pretty much the service turns ugly. Alex is just receiving her award, and she doesn't even have a chance to give a speech, which would have been super boring. Instead, dudes bust in with machine guns and shooting all over the place. We hear one of them mutter before they come out, aim high, we don't want to hit the billionaire. So we know that this dude's loaded.
Mm. Oh, and hence no casualties, which is good. Lucky for the people there that the guy was just super rich.
Well, you say no casualties, but little do they know that the family of Texas Rangers has shown up, and they're packing some serious heat. And they blast away and take out two of the caterers, and then
the caterers who were bad guys.
Yeah. And I will also say that several of the fights in this scene are pretty ridiculous, including when Trevette is smashing plates over the face of some guy. He like smashed like four plates on some dude's head.
Dinner is served.
Would a plate be more or less effective than just a punch?
I think a plate, like those, particularly the plates that like caterers use, they're like super heavy duty.
But they break when they hit him.
I think having one of those plates smashed over your head would mess you up big time. Yeah.
They're probably those breakaway glass kind of things, but the implied actual plate.
Yeah,
those things would be made to use through, you know, bar mitzvahs, shotgun weddings, all that stuff, you know?
So yeah, Trevette's smashing plates over guys' heads, Sydney's jumping around, and then Gage is like jumping over the buffet table and kicking people, and Walker is just firing his cannon from behind a table.
And he's protecting Alex, and I think one of the reasons, too, that he's extra protective of Alex is that she's pregnant, I think is the implication.
Yeah, maybe. See, you're much more observant than me. I didn't pick up on any of this, but now it all makes sense. You
don't care about the show like I do.
There were definitely some weird pauses in the dialogue that were sort of like, why did that happen?
I'm going to have to watch it again.
I think this one definitely deserves a rewatch, but
we'll get to that.
Yeah, we certainly will. That. So plates are thrown, and during this period of time, McNeely, who's the bodyguard for the Prestons, specifically for Mr. Preston's daughter, Heather, he actually scoots Heather out of the room entirely to get her to safety. And we're all thinking, oh, this is great. You know, like she's really safe now. Instead, he takes her to the family limo. And when the limo driver comes out, he shoots the limo driver.
This is the guy who was like looking under the carriage of it for bombs earlier. You just shot him? What?
Yeah, yeah. And then he hands off Heather Preston to one of the catering dudes. who throws an ether cloth over her face, and they toss her in a white van and drive off. And she's all like, "Why are you doing this, McNeil?" And he's like, "He's like, a million reasons."
Yeah. Man, I'm like, wow, the Secret Service broke bad.
Right. And all I could think of was, this is like Dr. Evil asking for $1 million. If the guy's right. a billionaire, like,
right.
come
right.
on now.
Didn't right. it end up being 100 million?
It does later, but he says a million reasons.
Right. Yeah.
But it was delivered with some serious conviction and smarm, and I appreciate that.
It was just good.
So she gets tossed in this nondescript white van, and I kept pausing it, trying to see what the van said on the side. I couldn't make it out. Meanwhile, everyone in the auditorium's all like, "Oh, okay, well, I guess we're okay. We're fine. No one's hurt." They don't acknowledge the fact that they just shot two guys dead in the place, but...
pretty chill.
Yeah, they're like, "All right, we're fine. That's fine." And they're like, "Oh, where's Heather?" And the agent who is in charge of keeping Mr. Preston safe was like, "Oh, McNeely told me he got her out of the room and to safety." They're like, "Oh, okay, is she still safe?" And he's all like, "McNeely..." And they... During the first, like, 10 minutes of this episode, the two of them are pretending they can, like, hear stuff in their earpiece. It's like they're playing at, which they are, but they're playing at being, yeah. like, secret agents, and they can hear things, the radio over their earpiece. And
talking into their wrist.
Yeah, talking to their wrist. So the guy's shouting into his wrist, "McNeely! McNeely! 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 McNeely!" And then he's like, "Dave?
Phil?
Right. Let's try his first name."
He's like, he's not answering. And that's when they realize the game is afoot. McNeely is nowhere to be found, and Walker suspects the worst. They run out to the parking garage, and they find the dead guy outside the limo, and the other dude is still shouting, "McNeely, McNeely."
Take a hint
into
dude.
His wrist. I'm like, man, this guy's really milking his 5 minutes. That's when they realize they've got a real problem, and so they decide to get Mr. Preston back to his place because they realize that he's probably going to be getting a call for ransom. Did you guys notice how cold everyone was in this scene? It looked like it was absolutely freezing. You could see everyone's breath.
Yeah, it's not even like that up here in New England right now. It must have just been a chilly day in Fort Worth.
Mignon was saying they kept those sets really cold because it's just a giant warehouse. And if they have the heat on, then it picks it up in the sound.
Yeah, so they definitely did not have the heat on in this scene. That's for sure. I think people were like visibly shuddering. But meanwhile, McNeely and his goons are bringing Heather to what might be like my favorite set we've seen so far. I think the Cannibal's Cave is up there with the parts of the plane and like weird bloody steaks
and skulls. I don't know, man. I think you also forgot about the white supremacist headquarters in Soul of Winter with the Nazi screensaver. I mean, that's set dressing of a different ilk.
This one is hilarious. So setting the scene...
It's like a really low-budget radio station with no stickers or posters or anything.
Yeah, it's like some dude's basement.
What's up with the sound reinforcement padding on the walls, though?
So no one can hear a scream.
Yeah, come on, man. That's Hostage 101, soundproofing. Also in Hostage 101 is making sure that your hostage is comfortable. And so her chair that they put her in is like this giant oversized wooden chair. I say it's like the guy's parents' basement because the cushions on it look like they came off of like a 1980s couch or like a rocking chair that had like some cheap cushions that they bought for it. So they have like these thin
his grandmother made
like
them.
Floral pattern pillows that they put on this wooden chair. So she's comfortable.
Very, yeah.
Yeah. But then they strap her in.
With like giant 80s belts.
Yep. Behind her in this room, it's a dark room with soundproofing foam all over the walls. And behind her is a large computer screen with 6 hours or 6 o'clock, it looks like.
A doom clock?
Sure.
Yeah.
Then to her right is this banquet table with an ancient 90s computer set up on it with a sick mouse. And then across from her is basically a wooden contraption with wires all over it and a shotgun pointed at her. And with the placement of the wires, we are led to believe that it's rigged to go.
The clock is a giveaway,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like a murder contraption that after 6 hours, this shotgun's going to fire on her.
Mm.
Seems a little elaborate given the end result, was my thought.
Extremely elaborate. And most importantly, positioned directly above the shotgun is a 2001 era Gen 1 webcam.
Oh, yeah. That thing looked sweet. Now, couldn't you, like, the idea of that, you sat it in that little cradle. It's like a ball, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And you sat it in the cradle so you could move it around different angles, right?
Right.
Sure.
It was like the most OG tripod, you know, little.
All right. We'll get to that camera movement sweet. In a little bit.
Yeah, I've got some thoughts.
Also the resolution, but.
Yeah, that was.
So this is clearly like a ridiculous setup. So he sets her up in the chair. And one of the goons is like, what about my money? And McNeely just shoots him. And so we've now established that McNeely is not only evil, but also a murderous evil person. So,
and the ringleader of this whole operation.
So, Walker and the Rangers get Preston home to await the call. Meanwhile, Gage and Sydney are transporting the two other caterers who came in with guns who were not murdered. So, plate smash guy and jump kick dude. Yeah. Those guys, we assume, are in the patrol car in front of Gage and Sydney. And what happens here is it's becoming a Walker trope. We're going to have to come up with a with a moniker for this. What happens, Bob?
Well, we get the guy. I think he's in the same van. And
same van.
Go back to what we said earlier. I think it was like an electric company or something. It was something very generic. But yeah, he gets out of the van and calmly pulls out a huge rocket launcher standing outside of the van. And then, points at the cruiser where his two buddies are that obviously they didn't want him to squeal. So yeah, they took him out. And that was a pretty intense explosion. Maybe matched only by the reaction from Gage, which I found fascinating.
So they light up the police cruiser that's carrying the witnesses that's in front of Gage and Sydney's car. And Gage and Sydney kind of see this happening as it's going down. And they start the classic back up, back up, back up kind of thing. And they back up just in the nick of time to see the witnesses and the local police just get devastated by this rocket launcher.
This is pretty much the same thing that happened in Flashpoint.
Yeah.
We'll also note that just like in Flashpoint, the shot of the actual car exploding was of a stationary vehicle blowing up.
But in Flashpoint, they had already stopped, so it made sense.
No, they hadn't. No, they were still driving.
Oh, really? Yeah.
But in actuality, had stopped.
I enjoyed it. They can do whatever they need to do to make that happen in my book.
It seemed a bit out of character that Gage and Sydney, I mean, if that were Walker, he would have pursued that white van. But Gage and Sydney just sat there in shock.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised.
I was expecting a car chase.
The sketchy van is Goldberg Linen Supply and Service.
So I think you could safely say that he takes that cop car to the cleaners.
Oh,
hey-o,
there. Okay, okay.
He puts it in the spin cycle.
Yeah, sure does.
He's not washing delicates.
Yeah, hopefully he doesn't rinse and repeat. Oh.
I think he's got it on high heat.
Okay.
And see.
So, meanwhile, back at the Preston mansion, Alex is there for support, and Preston he's losing his mind. He can't believe that this has happened to him, and we learn that Preston's wife had actually died, and that McNeely had been with their daughter since she was a baby, basically, after her mother died. And basically helped raise this child, which gives us serious doubts about the child's character, I would think. Alex is trying to reassure him, and he kind of like snaps at her. And this is another one of those weird things that maybe implies that she's pregnant, where he's like, it's not your daughter. And then
right.
it's almost like, did Alex like lose a child or something?
That's what I thought. Yeah, that's
weird.
What I thought.
So just as expected, the call comes in. And this is when we meet Preston's tech guy, whose name is Seth. And we know that he's a tech guy because he's got the same glasses that Adam and Bob have.
I legitimately thought that was Rivers Cuomo from Weezer. I was like, that looks just like him. And it's like, that looks just like him in 2001.
But, say it ain't so. Say it ain't so.
So Seth is all ready to go, and he's ready to trace a call.
Literally, the millionaire's like,
my in-house IT.
Who fixes the computers at my house. He's actually a expert hacker and can do things that the police department can't do. Wasn't that weird?
Okay, first off, this is 2001, so that's probably absolutely true. And two, the guy is a billionaire, not a millionaire. I think he's got good resources. This episode is so messed up, by the way.
Well, we can get into the ethics later, but well, I hope we'll
be forced to get into the ethics, I think. Yeah. So, okay, so the call comes in, and they try to get the trace on it. Of course, it is McNeely, and McNeely has gone full bore bad guy. We learn that he doesn't just want $1 million. He wants $100 million.
Oh, he wants it all. He wants it all.
Well, he doesn't want $1 billion. He knows there are some practical problems with wiring $1 billion at this point. So $100 million is probably as much as you can get in 6 hours. And he mentions 6 hours because that's how much time Preston has to wire the money before his daughter Heather is killed. And if Preston doesn't believe that, he can actually log on to the website. The website, you say? The website.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I got the website set up. It's www.heathercam2001.com. And just so your listeners don't risk getting malware and whatever else you might get from putting in a corrupt link, I did the research for you. And heathercam2001.com does not exist. So if you want that URL, you probably could get it. Might I suggest you don't do what McNeely did?
First of all, I was expecting it to be a porn site.
Yeah I was definitely, I did it with some trepidation.
Yeah, I wasn't going to do it.
You know that just you saying that, Evan, means that I'm going to have to buy that domain and recreate this website.
Oh, yeah, you definitely should.
I know, well, even back then, I love that back in 2001, the guy's like, oh, I got to set up this website. I guess I'll call it heathercam.com. Damn it. That's Heather Cam's right. Already
what,
taken.
Oh, I wonder what that is. Ooh.
Someone's already taken up heathercam.com. What do I do now? Heathercam2001.com. Okay.
Right. That'll do it. If not for the episode page for this on our website, we're going to have to do something with this. But just to describe heathercam2001.com, a black background, a video frame at the top that is widescreen. Which is advanced because at that time, most people still had square boob tubes.
Right? And keep in mind that these images are all coming from two or three Gen 1 webcams.
Right, which were extremely pixelated.
Fisheye lens.
Like, yeah.
Not in this episode, they weren't. These look better than the rest of the footage, somehow.
Yeah.
It's like the cameras that we're using to shoot the episode weren't as good as this webcam. It's magical.
So at the top of the page is this rectangular widescreen shot of Heather in her chair, bound, waiting to be shot by this shotgun machine that's going to count down to her death. And there are even shots that pan away on the website to the gun itself, right?
Yeah. So sometimes the website has one shot, and sometimes the website has three video feeds.
They have a multi-Heather cam?
Yeah. No, if you look at the set, there's even a camera behind her that's pointed at the gun.
I want to know who's doing the camera switching.
It's a very elaborate setup.
And also, multiple times, we see the shots in these move like a handheld camera would. And they're all mounted web cameras, so they shouldn't be moving.
All right. But, you know, it's all for dramatic effect. Mm-hmm. But regardless, essentially, it's like a live stream website, video on the top, underneath the video in giant pink letters, Heather Cam 2001. And then I think there's also a countdown clock on the website to her death.
I don't think there is, but that seems like a pretty big missed opportunity.
Well, maybe it's because it's behind her in real life. So I guess people.
But they don't see that on the website. It's
right.
This website is a mess. It has no consistency. Yeah.
It needs some work. And I think we're going to be able to perfect it when we recreate it on our website.
I think Seth, the computer nerd, could have made a much better website. But
yeah, that's, he didn't have time. Yeah, he didn't have the time. He only had 6 hours.
That's beside the point. I did want to get it off my chest, though, this time. Actually, Adam has the screenshot pulled up, and this is a perfect example. The show often does simulated screen images. So if someone pulls up a laptop and you see it, they just sort of superimpose what should be on that laptop, or on a TV, they do that too. And, you know, it's a bit jarring because the actual footage that is used to shoot it is like oftentimes a lower resolution than what they superimpose over it. But I'll say with this episode, there's so much screen time that normally it wouldn't bother me, but it really bothers me. And in this scene, we see a shot of a laptop that's open looking at the website, and the superimposed image wasn't rotated. So in this case, you see that the banner on the top is actually not totally level, but the image superimposed is. So it's like,
it's cropped, actually cropped badly like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, but you know, we have to remember, I don't think they edited this on any sort of digital.
No.
Like they didn't use any digital effects.
This would have been a pain in the ass to get that done correctly, though.
Yeah, that's why I'm giving them a pass. Yeah. But I know what you mean. It does look very weird.
Yeah, yeah, it's just not proportional. General.
That said, Walker's first response to seeing this website is asking Seth if, quote, can you hack into the website? To which Seth responds, yeah, I'll need some time, but I can do it. So, you know, for just about as long as there were websites, there was the potential to hack into the websites. So Walker tries to get Seth into hacking the website, and that's when we realize that there's not a whole lot that can be done at this point. So Walker and Trivette are regrouping back at Ranger headquarters, and they meet up with Gage and Sydney, who are cool as cucumbers after almost being blown up. Also, we can't forget that not only did the shooters get murdered by a rocket launcher, but also 2 cops in that patrol car as well. No one mentions this whatsoever. But they're like, okay, well, we know that McNeely's the ringleader, so let's look into known associates of McNeely. Trivette pulls up, you know, his sweet computer power. They're looking through them, and they're like, oh, man, you know, look at all these people, and these are some of the shooters that we got from their fingerprints. And then Gage is like, oh, can you go back? That's the guy who shot the rocket launcher. Or he didn't even say that. He said, that's the guy from the van. I would say that's the dude with the rocket launcher.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, it's William Borla. Looks like he served in the Air Force in the Gulf War with McNeely. To this, I say, let's do a deep dive.
And you've come to a Roundhouse Roulette deep dive.
This is a good one. Okay, so right here on their little screen, they've got William Borla pulled up. They've actually got a still image of William Borla from later on in the episode.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just noticing that.
So
he's
pretty
in the
good.
Hangar, right?
Yep, he's in the hangar, which we get to later. He served in the Air Force with McNeely. And the potential for overlap there is anywhere from 1988 to 1992. Now, if McNeely had been essentially the nanny bodyguard of Heather since she was a small child, which we are told.
Yeah.
And Heather is just about to turn 17. That would mean when she's born, both of these guys are in the Persian Gulf. So this makes zero sense timeline-wise.
He might have asked for some time off to go to the Persian Gulf. I mean,
4 years or so.
Yeah. Anyways, that's my deep dive. So they know this guy's a pilot. And just like the upside-down American flag at the cult a couple weeks ago, we know that there's a red flag here. And the red flag in this case is the fact that he was dishonorably discharged. So we know that he's a bad egg. He's definitely involved in this, and that he's a pilot. And he has a brother in the area who runs a pool hall called Conflict of Interest.
Yeah, I did a screenshot of this earlier, so.
Fantastic. So this sign actually exists, and so this leads me to believe that this establishment actually exists.
Yeah, it might actually be.
Conflict of Interest, where friends meet.
And there's like a blonde in a maroon dress leaning over, and she's hitting two pool balls.
Yeah, and she's surrounded by like a pool triangle.
And it actually exists.
I totally called it. They wouldn't have gone to the effort of putting us in there.
It's in clubplanet.com. Comes up. I don't know if this still is open, but yeah.
Put it into the road trip. We're going.
All right.
Star it in Google Maps.
MapQuest comes up. It doesn't even come up on Google. But it had a MapQuest listing, so you know it was real.
Yeah, hell yeah. Okay.
Around the time this episode came out, at that time I was printing out MapQuest directions to go to like concerts and stuff.
Oh, yeah. While they're doing background checks and they find out about this guy's brother who owns this pool hall, we cut back to Preston at home with his tech team all around him and Alex there, and they're watching this live feed of his daughter, and she just starts like quoting the Bible, and it just seems very awkward and strange and
creepy.
Awful.
Yeah.
It's just like really uncomfortable. And this is when local news actually catches wind that this is happening. And, you know, as most news stations do, they set up shop right outside the mansion.
Yeah, the mansion of the millionaire who's...
Billionaire, please.
The mansion of the billionaire whose daughter is kidnapped. They're like, oh, let's see if he'll comment on his daughter in the middle of the kidnapping.
And they also just rebroadcast the same stream.
Yeah.
Exactly. Which we got to get into in a second. But the newscaster's like, we're outside their house. There are a lot of supporters outside here who are praying for him.
Yeah. And then we realize that this is really sort of blowing up around the area. Everyone's kind of logged on or watching the news, and they're in it along with Heather here. And they are supporting her. And they say, you know, when she prays, we pray. And we see lots of strange scenes into random people's houses where they're basically watching a live stream of someone about to get murdered. And they're loving it.
Right. I like the nuclear Christian family that we get to see. Oh, yeah,
definitely. The guy like in the sweater vest. Yeah. And like his daughter's like, Heather, is she going to be okay? His wife is like, that's what we pray for, honey.
And then it pans over to the father, and he's like, that's right. Let's continue to watch this girl almost get shot.
I know.
Maybe she'll die. Maybe she won't.
This is great television.
Exactly. Riveting. Appointment TV.
Anywho, so that's super weird and strange.
Yeah.
And Gage and Sydney, they're going to check out Conflict of Interest Pool Hall, which is also connected to the Lipstick Gentleman's Club.
It's in the same plaza.
I guarantee that place is still open. Let's check that out.
It's recession proof. This place has never gone out of business.
I just hope everyone's masked.
It is.
Star that for the trip, too.
Oh, my God. So they pull up, and Adam really likes this scene. It is pretty much season 9 in a nutshell. Rangers pull up to a bar. There isn't even any subtlety attempted on either party's accord here. They basically bust into this bar, shout out the name of the person they're looking for. That person tries to be difficult, takes far too much license with the level of violence that they want to approach the law enforcement officers with, and an epic fight ensues.
Yeah, and this is Gage and Sydney. It should be noted that we haven't really seen Walker do anything this episode as far as action.
At this point in the episode, Walker is back in the office at the desk. He's retired to his middle management role, where he stays for the majority of the rest of the episode. He's just there calling people and going, yeah, that sounds right.
Walker, Texas delegator.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's pretty good at it, but we kind of wanted to see him get into the thick of it much like this. I mean, that's the thick of it, you know what I'm saying?
Of course they're having a Super Bowl party at a strip club in Texas.
That's thick with two Ks.
Most definitely. Oh, yeah. But I will say that their Super Bowl party at the Lipstick Gentlemen's Club in Dallas has 6 likes on their post. So
this will have happened before this episode comes out, by the way.
One comment, I'm in. Okay. Anywho.
Definitely check out the Gentlemen's Club. And
No, please don't.
Maybe they'll sponsor us.
I would take their money.
You take anyone's money. Yeah.
I think, you know, they could put it right here.
Oh.
right under my waistband. Okay.
You wore a thong for this episode.
I do for every episode.
It's part of your roundhouse roulette uniform.
I always like to tee up every episode.
Absolutely. I have all of this in mind before it even starts. Suffice it to say, they come in. They start the fight. Gage throws the first punch.
That guy kind of touched him, though.
The guy touched his shoulder, but Gage punches the guy in the gut, and then the fight ensues. As with Gage and Sydney, there's a ton of showboating.
Oh, my God. It's so good, though. So good. Like
the pool cue.
I got to say, this fight is one of the best Walker Texas Ranger fights I've seen, period.
Ooh. I don't know if I can agree, certainly, but I respect the respect that you're giving it.
I like your enthusiasm, but there's no Chuck Norris in this fight.
I know, but I got to give props to Gage and Sydney on this, Judson and Nia. It's not just like faking punches and stuff.
She's doing backflips.
Yeah.
He did the peekaboo move behind the bar and smashed the glass in the guy's face.
I love the point where Gage, he gets thrown over the bar, but then he comes back and then he jumps back on the bar and then vaults himself over the bar as if it's like...
the pommel horse?
Yeah.
Yeah, he just like jumps over the bar and immediately connects with someone's face to like a thunderous, like the sound effects in this are, it's like someone had a Casio keyboard and one of the novelty sounds on the Casio keyboard was different pitches of swooshing kick and punch sounds. They put their cat on the keyboard and it ran across it. That's what happened with the sound effects.
Sydney's fighting a guy. It's hand to hand at first, and then she does literally a backflip from standing position.
Yeah, and she grabs a pool cue and then basically has a pool cue fight with a redneck and obviously bests him with that.
Oh. He hung in there longer than I thought he would, though. You know what I mean? He put up a pretty good fight.
A lot of flannel and a lot of padding under that flannel.
Oh, man. But it was insane. And the best part was whenever there was like a really cool thing in the fight, like Sydney kicking a guy from the pool table, because at one point someone hit her onto the pool table and then she's kicking people from the pool table. Well, she connected with a kick from the pool table and they showed it from one angle first and then another angle again as if it happened a second time. And that's one thing they do in the show a lot.
Yeah.
Classic.
It kind of makes everything a little more intense. I see why they do it, you know?
I'm glad they do it. So, I don't know. This sequence, though, of this fight was just... it really did something for me. I really dug it. At the end, Gage gets Borla's brother pinned down by a bar stool. And the guy's like, look what you did to my bar, man. Because they wrecked the place during this fight. And Gage is kind of like, dude, you got to talk, man. You know, let us know what's going on with your brother. And the guy's like, I'm not telling you nothing. And Gage is like, all right, man, well, if you want to play it that way. And then he takes a pint glass and throws it against
one of the few remaining mirrors.
And the guy's like, oh, all right, I'll tell you what happened. And pretty much he said his brother came by a few weeks ago. He hadn't seen him in a long time, but he told him that he was thinking of doing something. Yeah. And then he was going to try to get far away. And that was all of the information they got.
That's all they got. Nothing. They got absolutely nothing from that.
Pretty much the do a crime playbook.
The best part, too, is like right after that, they're like, well, anything else? And he's like, no. And then like Sydney's immediate, well, all right, well, I guess we better head out.
Yep, we're done. It's like,
he said he didn't know anything until you like threatened him. And then he said something. And then you asked him again. He said no. And then you just walk out. But yeah, we got a good fight out of it.
So they're all like, well, sorry, Walker. We didn't get much out of it. We just know that he likes planes. And then Walker's like, oh, yeah, that's right. They're going to want to get out of the country. And they're like, oh, well, they're going to need a jet for that. I don't know where they got that from. I guess they must have heard last week's podcast.
Right.
When we dissected the range of most planes.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, where are they going to get a jet? And they're like, oh, Preston has a jet. Maybe we should go check that out. And cut to this baddie, Borla, showing up at Preston's hangar and basically just nose punching some dude into oblivion taking this jet. And we know that it's Preston's private jet because it has a gold P on the side of it. So I don't know if you guys caught that. But
yeah. Oh, of course.
Nice touch. Yeah. So by the time that Gage and Sydney show up at the hangar, that jet's gone. And they find a dead guy in a cabinet somewhere with corn syrup dripping out of the cabinet.
She like pulls her gun too.
I know.
Like, what do you expect to find in there? Like a zombie?
Well, possibly. It could have been a fake out. It could have been the guy waiting with a gun. It's probably happened to her before.
That's a good point.
So desk jockey Walker is like, you know, they can't possibly be hiding this jet many places. Like, we got to find a place that's nearby and that's got a airstrip that's long enough for the jet to land in, but also doesn't have the surveillance. And Trivette's all like, oh yeah, I'll pull this up on MapQuest. And he's like, okay, we've got three of them. And Walker's like, okay, why don't you and Gage and Sydney go check that out, and I'll just stay here.
Right, so each one of them go to a separate airport. So you're like, oh man, all three of them are going to have to split up.
Trivette, Sydney, they don't find anything. Gage, he hits pay dirt, and he sees Borla packing up the P plane with some sort of gear. And so he calls in. And let me say that this episode features Gen 2 cell phones to their finest degree. I believe the Motorola StarTAC.
With the pull-out is antenna.
Is on full display. The world's first flip phone. It's pretty sick. This was like the pioneer age of flip phones, where the phone can be closed in a dramatic fashion.
Oh, right. Yeah, I forgot about that. Like, you're like, I told them.
Right, right. Whereas like...
Clop.
Right. Previous iterations of the cell phone, it was very unsatisfying to hang up on someone. You had to hit a button, and you had to hit the right button, because if you didn't, you know, then you look like a real moron. Closing it very rapidly was sort of like the slamming into the cradle of the cell phone world.
Forgot.
And that's used to dramatic effect in this episode a few times. Important to note. Anyways, Gage uses his Motorola StarTAC to call Walker. And Walker's like, well, we can't possibly call in backup, so it's up to you to take this dude out.
I did like Gage's confidence, because he was like, oh, don't worry, I got this.
I'll call you when I'm done.
Yeah. Right. Meanwhile, Walker's like, okay, well, we got to get a trace on McNeely. So he calls Alex and he's like, have Seth shut the website down, shut down the live feed, because then that will make McNeely call in and then maybe we can trace this call. This ploy to shut down the website actually works. So the computer nerd Seth is able to hack into the website and shut down the live feed, much to the news coverage's dismay, which is maybe... Yeah.
The weirdest part of this episode. Let's dig into this right here. The ethics of this, because it's not really helpful to covering the news. It's almost showing other people's pain in real time.
At this point, it's like really strange, because the coverage goes away and they're like, what? The coverage is gone? They're like, what are we going to do? They're like, well, we don't know if it's ever going to come back, but we do hope she'll be fine. And everyone at home is all like, wait, the coverage is gone? Like, what are we going to do now?
Right.
And everyone was gathered around like it's freaking Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah, they show like the good nuclear family like, oh man, you aren't going to be able to see this poor girl get shot. I don't know what we're going to do with the rest of the day.
I know, it's completely messed up and really weird. So, of course, this also pisses off McNeely.
They show a scene of McNeely back in the lair with all the soundproofing in the same room as Heather in the torture chair. And she's kind of like, why are you doing this? I trusted you.
You know, I thought you were my friend. And she's like, McShadow.
And that was her nickname for him, which they kind of say earlier in the episode, because if you have a Secret Service person, they're your shadow.
And he's like, I always hated that nickname. You never had any problems in your life. You were raised with a silver spoon. Everything was handed to you.
Well, I was also partially raised by a homicidal maniac who kidnapped me and is a 6-hour countdown clock to my death. So yeah. There's that, McNeely.
You're going to need years of therapy to get out of this one.
If I make it out alive.
Sure.
Anyway, they have a bunch of things back and forth like that throughout the episode. So when they shut down the website, McNeely's in this lair and he's looking at his like ancient computer. And when he's like, the website's down. I'm thinking to myself, McNeely, did you forget to pay your GoDaddy domain subscription? I mean, because that happened to me with deathtofootball.com. I almost lost that domain.
Yeah, he was probably paying to like Homestead or something, right?
Yeah, Angel Fire.
Yeah.
One of those.
So he's pretty upset, and he calls Preston. And at this point, they've got the whole crew ready to try to trace this call again. And they're like, you got to keep him on for at least a minute. And Preston's all like, okay, fine. And so they have this blustery phone call. And I will tell you, the editor of this episode, on point. This conversation is exactly a minute. Exactly. From him picking up the phone to McNeely, as we said earlier, slamming his StarTAC shut.
He's like, the website's down. And Mr. Preston's like, I have no idea about that. We just want to make sure she's safe. And I beg you, please don't hurt her.
Long story short, this phone call is exactly 1 minute. And apparently that's not enough for computer whiz Seth to trace it.
He's like, I've got you within a 5-mile radius, which for Walker, I was like, oh, well, Walker can make a short meal of that, right?
Apparently not.
In the episode No Way Out, Walker heard a fire truck on a phone and was able to determine the position of where someone was. So 5-mile radius to me is nothing. So I was expecting Walker to be like, oh, 5 miles. Oh, I got this.
Well, McNeely saw that episode, and that's why he soundproofed the room.
Ah, figured there it you out. Go, yeah.
He's had years to plan this.
Literally.
Meanwhile, Gage is at this airplane hangar. He's planning his ambush for this bad guy, Borla. We know that the fight's going to happen because Borla walks past a couple of obviously empty barrels.
Right.
So we're like, okay, stage is set. We know what's about to happen. And so, yeah, Gage has a showdown with Borla, who, you know, as established earlier, Borla's got some sick moves of his own.
And Gage kind of surprise jumps down from where the barrels are, like from above, and they square off. And I was like, oh, I was expecting somebody to get hit into those barrels, not jump down from them. Well, Borla hits Gage and knocks Gage into the barrels.
He doesn't go flying through them. He just kind of runs through them.
Yeah.
Eventually, Gage just like sleeper holds the guy, which seems like a pretty poor strategy if you're trying to get information out of him.
Right. And then he calls Walker, and Walker's like, does he have a cell phone with him? Check what phone number he's been calling on the phone. Okay, there's only one number. That must be the bad guy.
Yeah, it's true. We've neglected to say, the whole time we've known Seth, he's been saying, I can't do much, but if you give me the actual phone number of McNeely's phone, I can trace him then. So I don't know how true that is.
Yeah, I mean, he's not working for any local authorities. He's working for a billionaire.
He's got billions of dollars. He can do whatever he wants, man.
Okay. Yeah, he's got like Batman money.
So armed with just the phone number, Seth is able to actually trace it down to an actual address.
Did you guys notice how Walker said, Jim, get the chopper ready? And I think Jim is the actual name of the helicopter guy from Walker, according to Mignon.
Oh, a little nod there.
Maybe he was actually calling him.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool.
We know that Walker is finally getting into some action here. And Walker hops in the chopper and he's off. Meanwhile, back at the soundproof room, McNeely is making his final preparations to get out of the place. And Preston's all like, I want to see my daughter again. Like, if she's going to die, I want to see her before she dies, which is weird, but I guess understandable. So they get Seth to get the feedback on with like a couple minutes to go. And the news station gets the feedback on too. And they're all like, oh, excellent. The feed is back. This is lovely. Just so you know,
we've made the difficult decision to keep the feed going.
Ratings are off the charts.
Right, right. The difficult decision would not be to keep the feed going. It would be to not show the feed.
Mm-hmm. We leave it up to you to decide what you want to do with your family and whether you want to watch. We do warn you that it, quote, could be graphic, end quote.
Yeah, I mean, there is a gun and there is a countdown to her death, so...
It's up to you.
Yeah. Right. Then they show, like, the nuclear family again, and they're all kind of just like, well, let's see what happens.
They're popcorn out.
Right.
Yep. They're like, oh, good, it's back.
Yeah.
No. When they cut back to the nuclear family, the daughter's sitting there watching the TV, and she's like, Mom, Dad, come back.
Oh, no.
They're going to show it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Super messed up. Really, just really weird.
Yeah.
Anyways, now we know that Walker, he drops down out of the chopper and he runs into the building and he's tracking him down.
He essentially goes up like the stairs to a loading dock, and then they show him like walking around this empty warehouse for a while, and you're like, clock's ticking, Walker, that he's only got a few minutes left. And the bad guy who kidnapped her is still there with her, right?
He had to finish his game of Minesweeper.
Oh, that might have been it.
Game's just super addictive.
So he's still in the soundproof room with Heather, who's about to be killed in 5 minutes.
Yeah, so things are counting down. The live feed is back up, and she tells her father that she loves him.
To the broadcast over the internet.
Yeah. Then she goes from being calm and saying, I'm going to go visit Mom again, to yelling, help me. And as she's yelling at McNeely as he's leaving, she's like, why are you doing this? Like, my dad paid you. Don't kill me. He goes to leave the room. And at this point, we should also note that he's put on a, quote, disguise, right, which is a really cheeseball-looking wig, which he had short, dark hair anyways, so he put on a wig that has short, dark hair.
It's slightly longer, more shaggy.
Yeah, and then he's got like a really poorly put on fake mustache.
a false mustache.
Right. So, like, if you saw him without this disguise on the street, you'd be like, okay, that's a human that has like no distinguishing features whatsoever. That's fine. If you saw a person wearing these things, you'd say, that's someone trying to look like Sonny Bono. That's really strange.
Yeah.
This is someone clearly wearing a disguise.
I'm glad it was in there, though.
Yeah. Yeah. That's okay. It's just you then?
I enjoyed it, yeah.
Yep. So anyways, he goes and he opens up the door to leave, and as predicted, just as he takes a step out the door, and we see from like his back facing out the door, a booted foot rises up to his head level and kicks him back into the room, and it's game on.
Do we have a name for that? The kick around the corner thing? It's basically just sucker punch. He does it all the time, right?
Yeah, it's a classic.
Do we have a name for that?
It's the stealth strike.
Yeah, stealth strike.
Or round the bend.
Yeah, round the bend.
Or open sesame.
Walker gives him a little of the old round the bend.
So he does a classic round the bend, high kick to the dude's face. And they've already established that McNeely's got some combat training because he's ex-military. And Walker is kind of distracted by trying to unfasten Heather from her restraints as well. So he's sort of double tasking. And maybe that explains why he's, you know, got such a tough fight with McNeely here.
Right. Essentially, Walker is trying to remove the strands off Heather. And while he's doing that, he's in the line of fire from the gun that's going to go off any minute because it's on a timer. And all of this is being broadcast over the internet on heathercam2001.com.
And on local broadcast news.
We should also say that this episode is the second one we've reviewed so far where Walker is fighting a bad guy in real time. And people are watching it on TV.
Right, yeah, that's a good point.
It also happened in The Patriot.
So, yeah, I mean, they're going back and forth, and Walker almost gets Heather untied from all these leather straps he's trying to undo, but every time he's about to get her out, McNeely comes around and gets at Walker again.
Throws a chair at him.
Yeah, it's always with a new inanimate object, like a phone or a chair. Or a lamp.
And there reaches a point, you're watching the clock, you're like, Walker, you've only got 10 seconds left. There's no way in hell you're going to be able to get Heather out and save her. what's going to happen here? Walker's back is to the gun, and you're like, is Walker going to die?
Last second, give him the old switcheroo.
McNeely, even though he could see the gun, he could not see the clock. His setup was flawed. And Walker could see the clock. And so Walker knew exactly when the gun was going to go off, assuming that McNeely's tech was all good. Right. And so he was able to grab McNeely, get him in a sleeper hold, and flip him around. And yeah, he's shot point blank in the stomach. It's broadcast over TV. Everyone watches a dude get murdered. And people are like rejoicing at this.
Heather didn't get killed, but they still showed a live murder on TV.
Yes. Yep. Yep. There's a scene in like a restaurant or a barbershop or something where all these people are gathered around, and there's like this old grandmother. And right after the dude gets shot in the stomach and dies on TV, this grandmother is like hugging people and being like, oh, thank the Lord. It's like, what? You just watched someone get murdered, you monster.
So good. So good.
That's really odd.
Wouldn't Walker get shot too? Wouldn't it go through the guy? I'm just throwing it out there.
I was thinking about this too, because if it was like a bird shot, it would have been like a spray.
Right. Which
probably wouldn't have even killed him. I mean, Dick Cheney shot a guy in the face with a shotgun.
Okay.
But if it was like a slug, it might still go through him.
So Walker was rolling the dice.
I think so, yeah.
So, yeah, Walker doesn't really save the day. He just kind of like murders a dude on TV. And millions of people watch this and...
rejoice.
Yeah, they rejoice in the guy's death. Heather is reunited with her father. She seems totally fine.
Right.
And I'm sure she will be for years. And Walker's reunited with Alex because, you know, Alex was watching him fight this dude on TV too. Like, she thought Walker was going to bite the bullet. It basically ends with that reunion.
Walker took a helicopter to save Heather, right?
Yeah.
Immediately after saving her, they show him and Heather in his giant Dodge truck driving back to the mansion for him to drop Heather back to her father. Someone would have had to drop the Dodge Ram off to him, right?
It's probably true, Matt.
They dropped it in. The helicopter went back and got it.
Okay, it was a hell carried over.
Yeah. He's like, well, what am I going to do? Just sit here and wait? I might as well go pick up his truck.
Well, that about sums up this episode. We'd like to give a shout out to our friend and collaborator, Adam Lauritsen, who has been drawing the amazing Walkerstrations for our social media. Be sure to check out his other art on Instagram at @imaginationrunamuck. When we come back, it'll be time for us to each rate 6 hours on a scale of 0 to 10 boots to the face, resulting in our patented Roundhouse Roulette episode ranking, the complete results of which are available on our website, roundhouseroulette.com. Don't go away. Hey, you can't hide from me, evil podcast listener. Do you want to do this the easy way or the hard way? How did I know you'd pick the hard way? While you're down there nursing those wounds in pride, you best mind your manners, because we here at Roundhouse Roulette have pledged to deliver the light of Walker, Texas Ranger
to the world.
And that doesn't bode well for evildoers like yourself. If you'd like to change your foul ways and lend us a hand in that mission, please share the pod with a friend or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Likewise, if you'd like to impress your friends with your utter Texas swagger, we've recently added some fresh new merch. That stands for merchandise at roundhouseroulette.com. We also host further shenanigans on our Patreon page. Most importantly, though, thank you for listening and for taking that sick roundhouse kick a second ago. Because without you, we just wouldn't know what to do. Oh, you didn't learn your lesson the first time, huh? Let's see if some internal brain hemorrhaging from repeated roundhouse kicks doesn't mellow out your splendor. Welcome back. Adam, you're up first.
I know this wasn't one of the better Walker episodes, but I still enjoyed it a lot. I thought the Gage and Sydney fight was classic. Also, the premise was insane, and the use of the internet as a plot device was amazing. And then, of course, Walker's boot around the bend to save the day was just what the doctor ordered. The fact that Chuck Norris didn't really do a lot in this episode, it's going to rank a little lower for me. But I would still recommend people watch this one because it was an interesting ride. I'm going to go 6.
How about you, Bob?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I had 4 for this one. I was like, I wouldn't recommend it, but it was good enough. Like, I actually didn't mind the pace of it. I thought the pace was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But that bad guy was just the worst. Like, he was like not scary or like just, he was just annoying almost. Like,
he wasn't very developed, but then when he put the mustache on, you were probably a little more into it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, honestly, this would have been a 3, but the mustache kind of moved it up to 4.
Yeah, I'm definitely not super high on this episode for all the reasons mentioned before. I think the villain was not particularly compelling. I think his reason for kidnapping a daughter in that he was going to get fired was like the stupidest motive ever.
Yeah.
You guys don't love me anymore, like, and you're going to make me go away.
Dude, you've had like 18 years to plan that this girl's going off to college. You know, you didn't line up another gig?
Right, right. Also, I would have loved to have known what his plan was. Like, he had a sweet wig and a mustache. Where was he headed? And what was he going to do?
Definitely Columbia.
Probably that gentleman's club. He probably was like, oh, the closest place I can stay, they wouldn't even think to...
I mean, I agree that the fight choreography with Gage and Sydney was pretty legit. And also the beginning fight where Trivette's just like smashing plates over dudes' heads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was so over the top. Very much season 9. But Walker is a freaking desk jockey the entire time. When he does fight a dude, he's almost bested. He needs to rely on an automated shotgun to finish the job for him, not a roundhouse kick. Otherwise, the media covering murder in real time is just really creepy to me.
It was a social commentary on the modern times. I mean,
it wasn't trying to be a social commentary at all. That's the problem. It's not like, oh, the media is awful. It's like, oh, the media is so great for covering this.
Oh,
it's
no,
like,
it was totally don't. A parody. It wasn't supposed to be taken at face value, Evan. I think that's your problem.
No, you're absolutely wrong. I'm giving this one a 3. Not a fan. So that gives this episode a rating of 4.33 boots to the face. I think we can all agree that background checks are a bare minimum must have for live-in security guards.
I mean, that security guard was playing the long game too.
Seriously, yeah.
But let us know what you think on social media or by emailing us at roundhouseroulette@gmail.com. When we come back, we'll spin that roundhouse roulette wheel and select next week's episode. All right, Bob, maybe we can get out of season 9.
We were out for so long. I'll do my best.
Season 6, episode 24, Test of Faith.
Is this one going to get like
Jesus-y?
Mystical?
Yeah, I'm hoping for act of God.
When a gang leader murders a popular teacher, Walker goes undercover to catch the man's killer.
Walker is going to be an undercover teacher again?
Well, it's not season 9.
That's true. Well, we hope you'll join us next week when we share our reactions to Season 6, Episode 24, Test of Faith. Share your opinions with us in the meantime on Facebook and Instagram at Roundhouse Roulette and on Twitter at Roundhouse Pod. And rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your fine podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next week,
may the eyes of a ranger be upon you.
You're in Texas, look behind you.
Oh, 'cause that's where the ranger's gonna be.